is up. And I got to add this too. Let's go. It is Canucks talk here on Sportsnet 650. The Magic Team, oh Canada, does it again.
Hell yes.
That was such a Kansas City Chiefs win. It wasn't the full-on Chiefs win because it only really got hairy, super hairy in overtime. We'll get into it. Oh, let me do my stuff first. We'll get into it. Anyways, it is Canucks talk. I'm Jamie Dodd. He's Thomas Drantz. Drantzer covers the Canucks for The Athletic as well. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Also, we're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, working together with you in step. This hour of Canucks talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. And let's just get right into it. So we got Woodley coming up at 12:30. Lots of goalie stuff to discuss today. Dimitri will join us at 1:30 to wrap up the show. But there is so much to get into. So let's just go right to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, February 21st. And of course, there is Canucks headline, or there is a Canucks headline, a big one to get into. But we got to start with the Four Nations face-off. Canada wins. Connor McDavid scores in overtime, and Canada beats the U.S. 3-2. What a moment for McDavid, for Team Canada, for the sport, for the country. Cathartic, joyful, awesome, memorable. It was everything we could have asked for going into that game last night.
If Connor McDavid doesn't score that goal, and if Team USA wins, the conversation around him for the next several months would have been wild. Because I'm not kidding when I say this. Aside from one moment of brilliance to get loose in the slot and one absolutely electric finish to calmly score an iconic goal and deposit the puck top Ched past Connor Hellebuyck, that was the single worst 60 minutes of hockey that I've seen him play ever.
It wasn't great.
No, it was worse.
He was
than
fighting
that.
The puck.
It was bouncing over his stick. He couldn't receive simple passes. Like, honestly. And that's what's so cool about hockey, right? Jordan Binnington, I'm watching him all game, and I'm so nervous every time the puck comes even close to him throughout regulation. And in fact, I would even argue to you that there were moments in that game where he looked so uncomfortable that I think Team USA switched up their offensive approach in the third period and started throwing stuff at the net and playing a different style of hockey because they thought that he was susceptible to a softy.
Binnington had one of those games in through the first 60 minutes where it didn't cost him. Like, neither of the goals were hit on him per se, but he just did lots of weird stuff. You know what I mean? It was one of those games where it's like, but none of them resulted in goals. So you can look back and say kind of whatever, but it's like, man, what's going on? Like, you're falling over, you're spinning around, you're losing your post.
You're swimming. He was struggling with his stick at times.
Like, it was weird.
It was a very, and then Binnington puts together perhaps the greatest clutch showing in the history. You know, remember the Luongo save in overtime? There was the one big save in 2010.
Right before the golden goals. Scott Niedermayer, all people, gives it away.
Right.
Yeah.
So he has the big save in overtime. Or the Patrick Sharp save before the Slade the Dragon goal, right? And it was like, I think Binnington had four of those. You know, the Matthews off the draw, the Matthews in front of the net.
Yep.
Eichel from a tight angle.
I think it was the Eichel chance, and then it was Kachuk from the tight angle. Yeah.
So, I mean, five alarm scoring chances, and some of the saves on them. I actually, you know, the Matthew Kachuk, the Matthews save from Gensel was the highest difficulty. Like, that should be a goal.
That's the one where, as you see it developing, you're like, oh, it's over. That's it.
The expected, the XG on that is like solidly 0.98.
Yeah.
You know, and he gets his blocker on it.
Especially with Austin Matthews.
Yeah, the best goal scorer, the best goal scorer on the planet, not by a little bit, over the last 5 years. And then, but I thought the push across to get his glove on the Brady Kachuk chance was ludicrous. Outrageous stuff from Binnington. And it's just this reminder how quickly hockey can turn, especially when it's single game elimination.
It is so funny, too. Like, the whole logic of him being on the team, where it's like, hey, one game seven in Boston, the finals in Boston, and it's like, that turned out to be absolutely correct. As soon as it got into crunch time, in Boston, he was flawless, kept them in that game, and gave Connor McDavid a chance to win it. Should also mention Nathan MacKinnon wins tournament MVP. So, look, I don't know that we did our kind of weigh in on the stakes yesterday. I'm guessing people can tell that my voice is a little raw today as well. I did quite a bit of yelling after that goal at the Hollywood Theater last night. But let's do a little bit of a wrap up here, and we can continue it later on in the show, get into it with Dim as well, of just kind of the hockey stuff from this tournament. And I want to run through some individual performances for Team Canada as well. Like, we talked about Jordan Binnington and all the criticism and concern about his play and the way he gets it done. If we're just talking about other standouts for Team Canada, and of course, you know, Connor McDavid gets a legacy goal for himself. There's a few guys I want to bring up. One, just as we're talking about the goal, how about Braden Point winning the race for the icing to set up that play?
Huge.
And by the way, I loved how locked in the crowd in Boston was, everyone we were watching with at the Hollywood, because that was like a big cheer and a big boo in Boston. You know what I mean? Because they thought the USA player had won
the race.
There
is no way the Team USA player won the race. No. Braden Point, that was such a clear icing.
But everyone is just so locked in on the game that like even the race for an icing becomes life or death. I mean, it ended up paying off for Canada. But shout out to Braden Point for winning the race for the icing set up the play. But if we're going through like...
Shout out to like everybody on that team now has this veneer to which like... So Sam Bennett's a player who I've long been critical of because I think there are real limitations in his offensive game. But after last night, it's like, I will go to war for Sam Bennett. you know,
dude, like, well, remember, what
there's no amount that Sam Bennett could get signed for an unrestricted free agency where I wouldn't be like, yeah, but he's Sam Bennett. He's a hero.
Last week or 2 weeks ago, you're like, how about Sam Bennett in free agency? I'm like, oh, I don't know. I just don't think he fit
and
is there.
Like,
and I'm
like,
let's
me.
Go get him in. Bring me Sam Bennett right now. 8x8.
Man's a hero. Did you see him lift the puck?
Oh, it was so good. It was incredible. Sam Bennett was on my list. It's just like, this guy's a monster.
Not only will I absolutely not criticize whatever contract number Bennett signs for, I would vote for him for prime minister.
Well, and I do think, I mean, if we're, as we talked on the show yesterday, right now we're in this new world of regular anticipated best on best tournaments. If you're looking ahead to Italy in less than a year at the 2026 Olympics, like, I think Sam Bennett did a ton to raise his stock, going from fringe guy on that roster, and he still might not make it. There's so much talent for Team Canada, but considering everything he brought and the way he forced themselves into their plans, scored a big goal, never looked out of place, right? Not, and we'll talk about this later on in the show, but there were guys on both rosters who kind of ended up looking out of place. Sam Bennett was not one of them, and that's really impressive considering he was basically the 13th forward. Well, he was scratched in the first game. So Sam Bennett, definitely. I think if we're just doing pure, like, not impact on the tournament, but just pure who increased their stock the most at this event, it has to be Thomas Hartley. And that's partly because the stock was like non-existent. You know what I mean? Like, people love Thomas Hartley around the NHL, but he wasn't even mentioned to be on this team. And then the injuries hit and he's watching from the hallway and he has to play against Team USA, does really well. Late Josh Morrissey scratched because of illness last night. He gets back into the game and it's not just like, oh, okay, well, you go play 12 minutes for us and we'll try to shelter you. He was a top four guy for them. You put him with Drew Doughty and they're the second best pair for Team Canada, maybe the best pair for Team Canada. And now it just feels like, it's not like, oh, he's put himself on the radar for Team Canada at the Olympics. It's no, he's booked his spot for Team Canada. When you come in those situations, in those circumstances, and John Cooper and his staff immediately start leaning on you and playing you in big minutes, and you're that effective, it felt a little bit actually like Drew Doughty at the 2010 Olympics, where he's so young and he doesn't really have the league-wide rep, and he comes in, you're like, oh, that's interesting. Like, how much is he going to play? What's his role going to be? And by the end of the tournament, it's like, oh, Drew Doughty is going to be on every Team Canada for the rest of his career.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I feel like Thomas Hartley's like left shot Drew Doughty from 2010, where it's like, oh, yeah, he's just a Team Canada guy now.
Well, they also put him with Duncan Keith. And by the end of the tournament, it was like, oh, that's Canada's best pair. And, you know, they put Hartley with Drew Doughty as Drew Doughty sort of passes the maple torch to Hartley. And they were such a rock as a secondary pair for Canada in that game, especially because, you know, one of the fundamental dynamics that I think played out was that Canada only had two pairs that you could really rely on.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not criticizing either Sanheim or Parayko, who I actually think individually would played pretty well. They just didn't have enough foot speed to contend with the American forecheck as a pair. And so the seams started to show. And, you know, most of the most dangerous moments that America had in that game were as a result of getting in on that pair in particular off of retrievals and generating just havoc and chaos out of that. Canada really struggled to do the same against Sanderson and Brock Faber and Slavin and Werenski. You know, they had a little more success against Adam Fox. You know, pour one out for the Eastern Media's psyop that Adam Fox is in the company of Quinn Hughes. What a joke.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone's going to be debating that one with me for a while here,
nope.
Jamie. I think that's just a TKO for Canucks talk. But Canucks TKO. But the Americans lacked, by the time Matthew Tkachuk got hurt, and because Trocheck reportedly has an injury, only mm-hmm. played 9 minutes in the game, Chris Kreider, who they scratched Kyle Connor for, played less than Matthew Tkachuk, who only played like a period of hockey. They ended up with like 8 reliable forwards. Yep. They were playing Brock Nelson in overtime.
The Kyle Connor scratch for some reason. Yeah.
He couldn't hang in that game.
No, there was a legit moment where I forget exactly what the circumstance was, but you know, there's some play going into the Canada zone and a U.S. player gets it kind of in the corner, but also it looks like something dangerous could develop. And I'm like, uh-oh. And then I realized it was Brock Nelson. I'm like, ah, it's all right. And that's not a slander on Brock Nelson. He's a multiple-time 30-goal scorer in the NHL, but it's just in that game, you weren't worried about him.
No.
You know what I mean? It was just the discrepancy between like real threats, real drivers in that game, real dangers, and Brock Nelson.
I mean, more than that, Brock Nelson was the soft underbelly that Canada could poke and prod. Like, the fourth line was a problem for the United States as that game went along. Anyway, let's put this aside because there's so much Canucks stuff for us to get to. I want to do a whole segment on winners and losers.
Yeah.
Coming out of the Four Nations.
We'll do. Now, we won't have time to get to all of the Canucks stuff here, so we'll do like a winners and losers, and because we got Woodley at 12:30 and then we got an open segment at 1. So we'll do like a combo, like you empty in the Canucks notebook and winners and losers from the Four Nations at 1.
Okay.
We can do some winners and losers Four Nations stuff with Dim too.
Now that's
and
true.
Looking ahead to 2026.
Actually, let's
and all
do that.
That.
Let's do winners and losers and I'll empty my Canucks notebook.
Yeah.
At
but
1 p.m.
the other headline is, as we temporarily put a pin in the Four Nations talk, and again, shout out to Team Canada, Connor McDavid. That was awesome. Kevin Lankinen signs a 5-year, $4.5 million AAV deal with the Vancouver Canucks. An extension, of course, he was a pending unrestricted free agent after signing the really cheap 1-year deal in September to join the team. He's been phenomenal, a really, really key player for them, obviously, pretty much second only to Quinn Hughes for this season. I will say, this was an eye-popper for me. The number and the term, the combination, I was a little taken aback. It's a pretty significant bet on Kevin Lankinen, and especially the term. But I think it's also very, very interesting what it reveals about their plans in the crease overall, and specifically Thatcher Demko's potential future with the Canucks. What was your reaction? And now you've had a couple hours to think about it, your analysis of the Lankinen extension.
Yeah, and make some calls. So, couple things. The first question that I think everyone has to have after this deal is, what does it mean for Thatcher Demko?
Yeah.
Especially because what I've been told is negotiations really, like, obviously the two sides have kept in touch, but Lankinen's camp dragged their feet on really getting serious with contract talks. They wanted certainty with the cap. They wanted to let Lankinen stick in that groove, build up the sample of quality performance. They knew the Canucks were pretty motivated to keep this player, given the fact that there's this internal sense, which Alvin touched on specifically, actually, in the prepared statement announcing the deal, that Lankinen had carried this team through much of this season. So yesterday, talks led by Canucks assistant general manager Emily Castonguay and Lankinen's representative Todd Diamond really sort of went late into the night, as I understand it, like all day late into the night, and the deal got hammered out yesterday. Now, I think it's a totally normal reaction to hear that and for Canucks fans to say, well, what does that mean for Demko? Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Demko's injury status played no role in it. at least in the timing of it. The Canucks wanted to get this done. They wanted to get this done before the break. They were happy to be able to accomplish. The break ended, and they were happy to be able to accomplish that. Now, what I do think is more interesting and where the Demko effect probably has a larger impact here is this is a huge departure from how Jim Rutherford has done business across 20 years of the cap era. Right. This is a hockey executive at the top of the Canucks hockey operations pecking order who has typically used the backup position as an area for cap savings. Does Demko's durability generally play some role in the Canucks wanting to buy an outsized insurance policy relative to their usual tendencies at the backup spot? Yes, no doubt. But my sense of it, what I've been told is the timing has nothing to do with Demko's current injury. Okay, this is not about that whatsoever. Two, the club still wants to keep Demko in the fold. They value this player highly, even though he's had a tough year with injuries. There's a feeling that doesn't guarantee that they're always going to be that's just like a new reality for this player. Thirdly, the cap's going up. The club believes that their sort of transition plan in this post-Miller era is going to require quality, reliable goaltending. And they think they can afford a 1A, 1B approach with Lankanen making 4.5. So that's sort of the Demko side of this, to sort of answer that question.
So, yeah, because to me, it doesn't mean Thatcher Demko has to be gone, but you are clearly committing, at least in my eyes, if you're committing not just the money, but the term to Kevin Lankanen, you're also committing to a true goalie tandem system, right? You're not saying, hey, Lankanen, you're not paying him that to play 25 games a year. You're paying him that to play 40 games a year, which means there's only, 42 games to go to the other guy. Now, I can envision, especially given his injury history, a really effective system built around Thatcher Demko and Kevin Lankanen as a tandem. And I expect that's what we'll see next year, certainly. The question becomes for me, how much can you afford to pay the other guy in the tandem? How much do you want to pay the other guy in the tandem? And what kind of appetite does Thatcher Demko have to be a part of the tandem and to be a part of, to accept whatever that salary entails? Because it does kind of feel like this is almost not closing the door on Thatcher Demko remaining with the Canucks long term. There's a clear path to it, and a really interesting path, I think, from a team building perspective. It does kind of feel like you're setting the parameters, though, of it. You're setting the parameters of, okay, we're not going to pay you like a workhorse, clear-cut number one starter, because if we were going to do that, we would just sign a 20 to 25 game backup. We didn't do that. We signed a 1B half of a goalie tandem backup. That's the deal we gave him. So do you want to be the 1A? Do you want to be the other half of this goalie tandem? If you do, that's great, and we'll pay you accordingly. But those are the parameters of the relationship between the Canucks and Thatcher Demko going forward. Is that a fair kind of read on it that I just laid out there, right? That it's kind of setting the parameters for what it would look like for Demko to stay.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think this does certainly signal a shift in terms of, look, at the very least, Vancouver's going to, should they retain Demko beyond this current contract, which has another year left on it, that Vancouver is going to probably be rolling with more of a 1A, 1B system as opposed to a entrenched starter and a backup goaltender. And look, I like that anyway. That's how I think a good team should be building their goaltending depth. Anyway.
So I think either way, we're looking at goalie tandem for the Canucks. The question is Thatcher Demko the other half of the goalie tandem beyond next year or not? That's kind of how I would frame it.
The truth is that if you're splitting 40-40, right? 41-41, which, never happens anyway. You're going to have 10 games from a third goaltender on average a year anyway, because this position is so physically demanding. By the time you get to the playoffs and have your 1A starter going, and you make it to where you want to go, they're still playing 60 games in a year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you get too much higher than that, you run the risk of a significant fall off.
Like, again, Connor Hellebuyck every year. There's other stuff going on there, but that's part of it. I think that's part of the story.
Year after year, we get to the playoffs, and it's like, well, Jake Oettinger's got a real big advantage over Stuart Skinner in the conference final, and it's like, no, he doesn't. He's dead tired.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think that makes sense. We'll see how the Demko thing plays out. Obviously, he needs to show that he can be available. club has a really complicated decision to make this summer when he becomes extension eligible. The player does as well. So, you know, we'll see how this transpires. Obviously, this does, though, change the relationship in some ways, or the terms.
Yes.
Of sort of how the Canucks are going to approach things with Demko going forward. But the club still remains and believes firmly in that player.
Yeah, and I think, again, for next year at least, it sets up a potentially really interesting goalie tandem with Demko and Lankinen. We'll talk more about maybe the Lankinen signing, certainly with Woodley, in our next segment. And as I said, I know you've got some other Canucks intel, so you can empty the notebook a little bit later on in the show. Just to include this in the broadsheet, you know we couldn't go the whole whiteboard without talking about Elias Pettersson. Elliot Friedman, both on 32 Thoughts today, and then he was also on with Halford and Brough, and Brough kind of asked him to expand or clarify some of the comments he made about Elias Pettersson's health on 32 Thoughts, with Friedman saying it's out there that he's battling something. There's people that say that he's hurt. There's people that don't think it's something that should prevent him from playing. So as Friedman's saying, like, hearing conflicting things, Friedman didn't really want to commit, oh, here's what I think is going on, just that those are the things that he's hearing. And, you know, I know there's the people, right? You saw the clip from the behind-the-scenes Four Nations thing where he's icing his knee, the big debate about the tendonitis, just another piece of information or reporting out there from Elliot Friedman that there may be differing views about exactly how hurt Elias Pettersson is, and also how much that's actually affecting his play and how much it has been affecting his play over the last year. Lineup notes quickly here. Canucks are traveling today, but they'll also practice in Vegas. Yeah, the NHL, it's back. The Canucks are going to play Vegas tomorrow, so they'll practice in Vegas at 1:30 today. We'll see if there's any thing we can update you from that practice before we get off the air. Canucks practice at 1:30 today. And just to do a quick reminder of where things stand in the NHL Western Conference and in the playoff picture, Dom's model, we're back to Dom's model that has the Canucks at an 88% chance to make the playoffs going into the home stretch here. So,
sorry, 88.
Yeah. So a very favorable chance to make the playoffs, not lock or anything like that. And of course, you look, it's still what, only I think a 3-point lead over the Calgary Flames. But if Quinn Hughes is healthy, I certainly like their chances. Yes, big if, but I like their chances to outlast those teams if Quinn Hughes is healthy.
I would say 88%, my view of it anyway, is I would rate that as being too high.
I think that's fair.
I would rate that as being too high. The truth is that we don't know. Demko's out, okay? And Quinn Hughes still hasn't been cleared, right?
And, not officially, yep.
And if the Canucks don't do real well over the next 7 games, which includes a pretty difficult road trip, multiple back-to-backs, some really good teams.
Back-to-backs without Thatcher Demko available.
Right, so Artur Shelovs, who's struggled over the course of this season, obviously, at the NHL level, does that change whether or not Canucks management is going to consider selling or not? Now, I still think the Canucks should be significant favorites. When last we saw this team, it's easy to forget, they were playing pretty fun hockey. They played really good hockey that last week before the Four Nations break. Now they should be somewhat more rested. Hopefully they're able to use that as a springboard and play the sort of hockey you need to outlast the Flames and Utah, which, you know, isn't that tall an order, especially given how far back Utah is in the standings. But the implied probability, so let's move to the gambling odds, of them making the playoffs is -370. That's more like a 78%. Implied probability of making it. And I would say 75 is probably a more realistic spot, just because Dom's looking only at team quality and not accounting for like injuries and what this team could look like if they do ultimately trade like Brock Besser and Pugh Suter, for example, at the deadline.
Yeah.
And I think more accurately pricing that in probably gets us closer to about 75%. By the way, the Canucks in Vegas tomorrow. I will be there. +135. Road dogs on the money line.
Very good. All right, that's the whiteboard for today. Kevin Woodley, lots of interesting goalie stuff to get into with Woodley. That we'll do that in the next segment coming up here. JanPro, from showrooms to stockrooms and everything in between. JanPro keeps workplaces tidy, clean, and disinfected. For a free quote, visit janpro.ca. Kevin Woodley next on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.